He was smart.
Good morning. I'd like to bring to order the House Committee on Business and Labor. Good morning, committee. I think first we will adopt the committee. First, we'll have introductions, and then we will move to adopt the committee rules. For those of you that have not met yet, I hope to. I think there's just a couple on this committee I haven't met yet, so we'll be talking a lot during this committee. We have a big committee, so we're going to have to kind of stay to the point. And with that, I'm Paul Holvey. I'm a state representative from District 8, which is in the South Eugene, Fern Ridge, and Lorain Valley areas. And with that, I'll turn to my left.
Committee administrator.
Oh. Well, yes, thank you.
No, let's just do that, because she's important.
She is to the left.
I am. We can't function without her.
I'm Jan Nordland, committee administrator, so come to me with any questions about committee process and postings and what have you.
Good. I'm Bill Kennemer. I hail from District 39, live in the Canby, Oregon City area, and represent a substantial portion of rural Clackamas County.
Okay, I'm Margaret Doherty. I'm House District 35, which is Southwest Portland and Tigard.
I'm Dallas Hurd from House District 2. That's Roseburg down to Merlin.
I'm Paul Evans. I'm House District 20, Monmouth Independence, West Salem, South Salem.
Sal Escobar, Representative District 6, Medford.
And to the near right.
I'm Representative Shamia Fagan, House District 51, which is Outer East Portland, Gresham, Boring, Damascus, Happy Valley, and unincorporated Clackamas County.
And I am Greg Barreto, House District 58, and that is Wallowa County, Union County, and part of Umatilla County.
I'm Representative Rob Nose. I represent Southeast Portland and a little teeny slice of Northeast Portland, from District 42.
Great. And being excused today is Representative Barton and Representative Widener, who won't be in attendance today for various reasons. And with that, committee, I think you've all been presented with the committee rules that were approved during organizational days to present to our approved to present to our committee. So with that, if anybody, I'd like a motion on approving the rules.
Chairman, I move approval of the rules.
Representative Kennemer has moved to adopt the House Committee rules for the House Committee on Business and Labor for the 78th Legislative Assembly as presented. Is there discussion about the rules? Is there any objection to the adoption of the rules? Seeing none, the rules are adopted. Thank you. So with that, committee, we had three bills scheduled for public hearing today. Unfortunately, the first bill, House Bill 2415, the presenter has met with some unanticipated issues and won't be able to be here to testify, so we're going to pull that bill from hearing today. And whether we carry it over or not, we'll have to decide later today, so we probably will. So with that, I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2471.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this measure changes the qualifications to practice as a funeral service practitioner or an embalmer, including qualifications that are relating to reciprocity and apprenticeship. And it clarifies the qualifications of the preceptor who is supervising interns and the notice that the preceptor provides to the mortuary and cemetery board. There's no amendment before you, there's no revenue impact, and there's maybe a fiscal impact. We haven't requested one.
Thank you. And do we have Michelle Gaines and Dwight Terry this morning to help explain what this bill does or does not do? Good morning, and if you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Michelle Gaines. I'm the executive director for the Oregon Mortuary and Cemetery Board. With me today is the board president, Dwight Terry. I have a presentation over here in a moment. I want to start by talking about the origins of this bill. This is true of both bills before you today. This comes out of a process that we've been working on as an agency to really involve our stakeholder community, both our licensees and then interested parties that follow our process. We use annual day-long planning sessions where all stakeholders are invited to attend and participate in what becomes our strategic plan out of the agency. Because it is difficult for folks to attend, we do rotate around the state to involve different communities. We also send out a survey to all stakeholders, so even if they aren't able to attend the annual event, they're able to give input that we do incorporate into the planning session. Both of these bills are a result of top concerns or questions that came out of that planning session, and so come before you today with the recommendation and the support of our planning process, our licensee base. The first bill, to talk a little bit about the drivers and then therefore the outcomes that we're seeking to achieve. There have been shifts in the industry and what we call disposition preference, which means cremation, embalming, burial, things of that sort, and of course economic drivers that hit just about every industry. The way things have been structured historically in this industry is for testing and for the primary school that trains in this industry, that has been located in Portland. It has been a while that come to Portland model really doesn't work for most of the state for a number of reasons. Folks want to stay in their own communities. Either we have folks that are re-entering the field at an older age, so they've already established a presence. They aren't the directly out of high school college kids that can afford to move for an apprenticeship in Portland and be out of their community for that period of time. We do have an aging workforce. The median age of a practitioner is 54, according to the last national survey. So at the same time, we also need to be very cognizant, if you will, of the income point for the industry and make sure that there is sufficient supply. The greatest impact is where there's the lower populations, which are in the majority of the state and the individual communities. And we're also seeing impacts from a reduction in consumer interest in embalming, which impacts the embalming side of the equation. It means that there's fewer bodies available to do an apprenticeship in other facilities. There's also been a change in the way the industry structures its practice. Whereas embalming services used to be located in just about every facility, some companies have centralized that where they would have one facility where the embalming is done to serve multiple funeral homes. And because of the way the law is written now, that means fewer places for an embalming apprentice to be placed to get the necessary practice. There has been practitioner movement between states, particularly in the last number of years. We've had folks that may have gone to California, Washington, or Idaho because they haven't been able to find a job. They may not have been able to find a job there. They want to come back here, or folks that just want to move to Oregon because it's a great place to be and so want to pick up work here and may have been licensed in another state. And employment, we've seen, has impacted folks from the standpoint of creating gaps in their employment. Most of our reciprocity requirements have been based on folks having worked immediately prior to their move to Oregon, and that just hasn't been practical of late. The other piece that we want to do is incorporate some better, if you will, educational research and practice as to how you assess competency. The current structure is that it's a certain number of hours within a certain period of time and then a certain number of cases. There are folks that are able to perform up at an appropriate level of competency in less time. there are some folks that need more time in order to reach that same level of competency. What we want to be able to do is shift to a competency-based assessment rather than purely a number of cases and a number of hours. The bill is structured so that that basis is set, and then the specific competencies would be developed with an advisory group made up of educational institutions and folks within the industry to develop the specific competencies, which of course also evolve, so the advisory group would be an ongoing basis. Distance learning has also become a greater option, particularly in other areas of the state. Again, they don't want to come to Portland to have to get their degree. So what the bill does, there is a lot of this bill that is the result of legislative council going through and modernizing the language because this hasn't been touched for quite a number of decades. As far as the policy or the substantive pieces, the first sections going in the order of the bill, sections 1, 2, and 3, speak to the funeral service practitioner. The biggest change there is that it allows the test to be conducted by a third party so that we can make it available throughout the state. We're a small board. We're fewer than 6 FTE located in Portland. To date, the way the statute had been written, our only option was to have folks for this exam come to us. We don't want to do that. We want the exam to be available to them, so this change would allow us to hire a firm that can provide that, similar to the way we already provide the embalming exam, because that was written a little bit differently already. Sections 4, 5, and 6 focus on embalming. What we focused on there, the major change, is to allow entry into the field for qualified applicants without mandating that they have an associate's degree in funeral practice and embalming. Right now, the way it's written, to be an embalmer, you have to have that particular associate's degree because we are seeing folks wanting to return to this as a second career. What that would require is somebody who may be working as a medical examiner, pathologist, that they would actually have to go back even with that advanced degree and specifically get the associate's degree. This removes that. They would still have to be qualified and meet all of the requirements, but it would allow for them to not have to go back and get that specific AA degree. Sections 7 and 8 speak to reciprocity. This would allow for the transfer of qualified apprenticeships. If they happen to start an equivalent apprenticeship in a different state and we're moving to Portland, that we could bring over and give credit for some of that experience, which we cannot do right at the moment. They would have to start over. It changes a 3-year minimum of experience to 1 year of experience. They still have to meet the qualifications and take the test and do the other things. It was structured right now that they have to have 3 of the last 5 years of experience. This is reducing the barrier for entry for qualified applicants. They are proving competency to compensate for that. And I do want to note that we are working with the Funeral Directors Association, who has requested one change, which is on page 4, lines 4 through 6. They would like to have the word immediately removed. They think that that creates some ambiguity. So we are working with them right now to clean up that sentence and make sure that everyone understands that the intent there. Sections 9 and 10 deal with apprenticeship and internship. It removes the fixed limits on the number of apprentices. This gets to the issue that I spoke of where there may be only one location in a community where embalming happens. And right now you could only have a couple of apprentices, which greatly reduced the number of apprentice possibilities. This is going to be based on the number of apprentices that you can supervise is based on your ability. And so the board will be able to have some flexibility in improving that. As I mentioned, the shift in the hours to competency assessment, it adds clarification for the role of the supervisor or, in the case of internships, the preceptors. It creates a little more accountability for those individuals to be in good standing, to be aware of what their responsibilities are of being a supervisor or a preceptor, and for everyone to be on the same page as to what is supposed to be accomplished. They would also be signing off on part of the competencies, as would another individual who's not their supervisor. It allows for other internship programs from other schools. It includes a clause that would require other facilities, not just Mount Hood Community College, to register with the board. And if they do that, then there would be the option for an Oregon licensee to be a preceptor for an internship for a distance program for that portion of it that needs the hands-on requirement.
Thank you. Before we get into 2472, questions so far from the committee about any of this on the first bill? So it looks like I'm the only one that has a question at this point. So I'm curious, you know, just because we've done a lot of work in this building on other avenues of workforce training, has the cemetery board had any conversations with the apprenticeship and training division with Boley as we use accredited apprenticeship means something? And, you know, want to make sure that we, you know, we don't confuse these issues, you know, as much as possible in statute when we're talking about accredited and approved apprenticeship. And so I'm just wondering if there's been a dialogue with the apprenticeship division to help with and also accredit the apprenticeship program that you speak of, since you're putting this into statute, not just internship, but you're actually calling it an apprenticeship.
Chair Holvey, we have not had conversations with Boley. We will absolutely do that. We have been having the conversations predominantly with the Mount Hood Community College, and it is the both for the internship and the apprenticeship program, and have been coordinating with the national groups that are the equivalent of this board in other states, and with some folks at OHSU. But we will definitely connect with Boley.
You know, thank you. I think it might be helpful, both to your the board's mission and in helping us keep straight what's approved and what's not.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's a particular issue with it as such. I just think that that conversation could be helpful.
Yes. Thank you.
And with that, if there's no other questions on 2471, I'll go ahead and close the public hearing on 2471. Well, maybe I won't close it. what I'll do is open concurrently House Bill 2472.
Okay. This one's shorter. 2572, it essentially does one change, which is to enable the creation of a self-inspection program to add to our existing inspection program. Starting with a similar point, I won't go through the majority of the slide again. This also comes out of our stakeholder planning session. This was identified as a top request, not so much a concern, but a strong suggestion for involving licensees more in the process and creating some incentive. There is some concern longstanding in this industry that everyone is treated equally, and there's sometimes, as a regulator, it's not always perceived as in a positive means. Our conversations have been changing that. This is one of the suggestions that we're bringing before you as another way to create greater transparency. One thing I do want to emphasize is that this is not replacing in any way the centralized inspection that we do of all facilities each biennium. This does allow us to create a program to create qualifications by rule and then incorporate that, if you will, into our toolbox of ways to do that. The drivers on that, of course, is to increase the involvement and the transparency. It also allows us to use our limited resources more strategically by creating more of a risk-based assignment. Right now, we do have to get everywhere in the state at about the same time, and everybody is treated equally. The truth is, sometimes there are priorities that should take precedence for our staffing. It would allow us to schedule things on a risk basis rather than a it's your month to be inspected basis. So some flexibility there. And the other piece of it is, by having folks directly involved in going through the process of inspections themselves, they know what to expect. It's an educational opportunity in of itself without the perceived threat of an inspector being on premises. So it breaks down some of those additional barriers. What the bill does, there's a lot of modernization again in this bill. Section 1, what we requested was to remove language that required that an inspector couldn't be a person actively engaged in the profession or a board member. With that language as written, it prevents our ability to even consider a self-inspection program because of this language. That language is being removed. And then Section 2 repeals a number of sections that Legislative Council informs me is dated and unnecessary. It has to do with inspection authority. And what they've conveyed is that we actually already have that through another centralized means. So by removing our specific language, it makes that language consistent with the other health professional boards that do inspections. Short and sweet on this one.
Thank you. Any questions so far? Representative Fagan.
This is purely just for clarification of the record. Your materials say House Bill 2572. Our materials say 2472.
My material is incorrect.
No problem. I make that mistake myself commonly. I just want to make sure that we were all on the same page about what bill it is.
Yes. 24s.
Yeah, 24s. Mistakes also with 2571 or 2471. So, any other questions? Mr. Terry, any comments? Anything to add?
Representative Holvey?
Yes.
I'm glad to be here. It's
introduce yourself. Introduce yourself.
Dwight Terry.
Thank you. But no further comments to the testimony. And I am sure we've already heard.
Maybe I have one question for
Go ahead, Representative Doherty.
I assume that the industry is supporting the changes in this.
Representative Doherty?
Uh-huh.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
They are.
Thank you very much.
Great. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there any time that we can get to the point of where we have one license throughout all 50 states? Because I can't understand what the difference between California and Oregon or Washington would be.
Chair Holvey, Representative Esquivel, that's an excellent question. I think that it will take some time. There are some states, such as Colorado, that do not even require a license for practice. And then some states see it as a single practice where we distinguish in Oregon between a funeral director that meets with families and an embalmer who does the embalming process. They're two separate licenses. In some states, it might be called an undertaker, and they do all of those things conceivably. States appear to be working more closely together, but I would say that it's probably a decade off because of how it's evolved over time.
Yeah. Any other questions, comments?
Is there anyone else from the industry to speak or anything?
No one else is signed up for these two bills. So if I think you have an industry question, you could pose it to Mr. Terry, who could take it back, or to Michelle Gaines, who could take it back to their board.
I don't know that I do. Just was wanting to hear a statement about
right.
I read in the materials that they're supportive of this, but like to hear that in words.
Yeah, a good point is that, you know, if we have materials that say the Funeral Directors Association or, you know, some industry group supports this, it'd be nice to get that testimony in writing at least, you know, to put it on the record. If no one from those organizations, I mean, I'm not requiring them to come here and say that, but it'd be nice to have a letter if that was possible.
Absolutely. The primary association, the Funeral Directors Association, we have been working with them. I do know that their lobbyist became unavailable at the last minute. Otherwise, he would be here. I know he sent email in support, but we can talk to them and make sure that they get that
okay.
in a different form.
Sounds like we do have it on record then.
I believe so.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Nothing else? I appreciate you coming forward, getting us started with you know, some pretty lively topics.
We don't often get to go first. Thank you.
So with that, I'm going to close the public hearings on House Bill 2471 and House Bill 2472.
Mr. Chairman, this is foreshadowing of how the committee shall proceed.
Yeah.
They're straightforward bills. I didn't have any questions.
With that committee, pretty short agenda today, given that one bill was pulled. Appreciate everybody being here, paying attention, and I think coming up Wednesday we have on our agenda House Bills 2480, 2567, 2568, 2671, and still 2731.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps we will go ahead and carry over the bill we did not hear today to Wednesday, which is House Bill 2415. And we'll see if how our testifiers develop on that.
This is about redefinition.
So with that, anything else, Jen?
That's it. Thank you.
With that, we're going to close the House Committee on Business and Labor for today. And we'll see you Wednesday.
Thank you for the 8:30.
You mean we'll see you Wednesday.
Thank you.